Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Hey, listeners, you've got Mark here, and this is the Negotiations Ninja podcast. Thank you so much for being here. Today, my guest is the amazing and incredible Sean Callagy. He is a world-class adventurer, one of America's top trial lawyers, a chief visionary officer at his amazing firm, Unblinded Mastery, and he's got this amazing show called The Real Raw Show, which is all about matching celebrities and influencers together and getting one to get the other from deal intro to closed, with judges then casting their votes on who did the best. This guy understands communication at a very deep level. I highly recommend that you check out his stuff. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy this, please share it with your friends, family, and colleagues. Obviously, give us a shout out on social and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much for being here. Have a wonderful day. Sean, we did it, man. We made it. We're here. How are you?
Mark, I'm doing great. So thankful for everybody out there listening and fired up to have a chat.
Man, I'm fired up too. I started watching some of your videos online. I was like, man, this guy's on fire. I was blown away by your videos, dude.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, brother.
Very high energy. I love it.
I think that energetic transference equals influence. And I'm excited to drop in. And I know you're a brilliant man in the space of negotiating influence. So it's an
honor. Now you're being far too kind. Far too kind. Well, listen, before we begin the show, let's tell the listeners who you are and what you do. Go ahead and let them know.
Yeah. So, hey, my name is Sean Callagy. 23 years ago, I discovered that influence is a superpower. And that's after I lost my dream of being a professional baseball player. I've been captain of the Columbia University baseball team, and I was going blind. And so I went to law school because I didn't know what else to do with my life. It wasn't because I so desperately wanted to be an attorney. And it was at that point that I was blown away to see that influence mattered in the world. And that may be something that was incredibly naive for somebody who went to an Ivy League undergraduate and they got into law school, but they really don't teach you about the power of influence, shockingly. And that became something that I was obsessed with after I realized at my law firm that people who were way less experienced were experiencing more money, more freedom, more influence over their life and other people than folks that had been there for much longer. And what I came to understand were that folks that had the ability to influence were in the positions that they wanted to be. Either they were the generators of clients, they were the resolvers of major situations. And I realized I had none of those abilities and I needed to learn them and acquire them. And that became the journey of my life 23 years ago. And I'm incredibly grateful that it was.
Amazing, man. You're not the only lawyer to come on the show to say, shockingly, they don't teach you influence and persuasion in law school. And it's insane to me that lawyers go out into the world and they're like, they know case law and they know all of the history and everything like that. But for whatever reason, they're never taught, you know, they maybe have one course in negotiation or one course in public speaking. But in terms of developing that influence skill set, that's really hard to do. And that's something that you've managed to do over your career. And that's what you're really, really great at. Why do you think it is in law schools today, there's no formal education on that? Is that some sort of major failing that we need to fix?
I think it's an extraordinary failing that needs to be fixed for our entire educational system. And I honor teachers and their sacrifice. And these are wonderful human beings. But I am perplexed by what we teach people in elementary school, high school, college, graduate school, law school, medical school. I literally thought at one point that law schools should be liable for fraud, for accepting students and not giving them any optic on the economic dynamics of becoming an attorney. You know, people, right. When I went in, I thought, okay, you become an attorney, you make a good living. It's not even remotely what happens. I was $100,000 in debt. I got the job coming out of law school. I got the job and quote unquote, the job put me in a position so I could barely pay my rent in my tiny apartment, pay my car payment and pay my law school loan. And it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, if you're there for a little bit, things get a lot better. No, the next 10 years after that was a landscape of cost of living increase. And so, yes, there's major flaws in the dynamics of what we understand in our educational system, particularly in teaching the skill of influence.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I think that you do a really great job of is teaching people the process of communication, teaching them that influence is something that's not, you don't have to be born with. You can be taught how to influence. And I love how you break it down into a formula. Essentially, you've got this four-step process of communication, which I think is brilliant. And I want to cover that with you. You start off talking about the creation of emotional rapport. Help the listeners understand what emotional rapport is and how that's different necessarily than what we always hear about with just generating rapport.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mark. So there's three levels of rapport. There's surface, there's real, and there's emotional. And until we get to emotional rapport, as soon as we shift into anything that we're affirmatively communicating about an idea, our perspective, and all of influence is about, right, a couple of simple things. It's about having an idea, communicating an idea, having it received by somebody else and acted upon. So as soon as we move into that shift, if we don't have emotional rapport and listening is not open, then all we sound like is Charlie Brown's teacher saying, wah, 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 wah. And what emotional rapport means to me, Mark, and all you amazing people out there, it means this. It means that our message is open for receipt, that there's enough trust, enough belief that the communication we're having is authentic because there's been a connection established. And there's a lot of data that's coming out and people would look at, you know, all of communication is not about relationship. It's about perspective on value exchange. And I agree that it's about perspective on value exchange. However, there's a misinterpretation of value if there's not emotional rapport. So the way we get to understanding value exchange is we have to believe in the authenticity of the perceived value. And that comes on the heels of the establishment of emotional rapport, which again means that we're connecting more at a heart than head level. Yes, I said heart than head level. And yes, this applies to everything from engineering to the courtroom to prisons to every conceivable dynamic. And I could run it down with example after example after example. But yes, step one is the opening of emotional rapport, heart-centered connection. So listening is in place.
I love that. You know, there's, I think for whatever reason, we've developed this idea in our mind that we've got to be able to influence someone or persuade someone based on the logic of our argument. And that's true to a certain extent, but so many people don't understand that emotion is such a big part of that. And in fact, I mean, throw back to when Aristotle started talking about the three things that you need to make a persuasive speech. He started speaking about ethos, pathos, and logos, right? And everyone talks about logos, but hardly anyone ever talks about pathos, which is the emotional aspect of it. Ethos, obviously, the ethical credibility. Yes, we can get into that discussion, but no one talks about pathos. I love that you start off your formula with creating that emotional rapport because it's so sorely missing in so much influence teaching today. Step two, you start talking about pain and the yes strategy. What is pain and the yes strategy?
Yeah, people make decisions because they're in pain and they want to get out of it because they want to avoid it, period. So people don't get into better shape until they're in pain. Now, everybody has a different place where their pain is. People don't make more money until there's pain. They don't create more time freedom. They don't commit and make a decision in a situation. Nothing happens without pain being present. And so in a lot of our communication, going back to the beautiful framework of Aristotle that you just described, P.S., when I took logic and rhetoric at Columbia University, there was no discussion of ethos whatsoever. And there was very, very little discussion. No discussion of pathos whatsoever, and very little discussion of ethos. And everything was logically based. So I couldn't agree with you more. And as a quick footnote, and I'll get back to pain and yes, which is actually a subsection of it, is if we think this isn't true, and somebody's like, no, I am a logical decision maker, then ask the most logical decision-making human being that you know that has children, if they think they're a logical decision maker. And when they say yes, say, that's the most ridiculous decision in the entire world. Why would you ever have a child? They're expensive. They're complicated. They cause problems. Like, why would you ever have a child?
Yeah.
For the emotional fulfillment. Why would you ever have a monogamous relationship? It's the dumbest thing in the entire world, right? Except for emotion.
Classic. Love it.
Drives decision-making. I could, many other examples, but so pain and yes. So people make decisions, including having children, including having that relationship, including making a cold call or any other thing that they do, because the pain of not taking the action exceeds the pain of taking the action. And by bringing people present to their pain and putting something at stake, we also talk about step two being putting something at stake. Now we have somebody present to the reality of something different than what they're concerned about, which is that you're going to take advantage of them and harm them. And that's why people sit at a default no. So after emotional rapport is built at step one, at step two, Mark, as you articulate, we are presented with having to defeat somebody's default no. If we think we're going to try to take them to a yes, we don't like people taking us to a yes. We want to go there on our own. Mm. And we go there and on our own, we are present to the pain of not going there. So that's the wildly general overview of step two.
I love that you say we need to help people to understand that there is pain associated with not getting to yes. How do we develop that emotional state? How do we help formulate that idea in their minds?
Sure. Can we play with that for a second?
Sure.
Well, let's say that we built rapport at step one, and the five components of building rapport at step one are, where have you been? Where are you? Where are you going? What's working? And what are the challenges? I have built successfully emotional rapport one-on-one for the last 14 years without fail, for 14 consecutive years, following that, not script, but that concept of conversation. And that's step one. So when that's completed and somebody is sharing their vision, go, people actually talk that way every single solitary time. Now at step two, in pain and yes, it would sound something like, so Mark, I'm hearing you that your vision and mission is to bring negotiating skill sets to the world so people don't sit in ignorance and are empowered to bring about ethical, phenomenal, integrous results for themselves and those people they love and care about and represent. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah.
And a part of that mission and vision is what energizes you, and it's something you want to do for the rest of your life, and you want to expand that impact as broadly and largely as you can. Am I hearing you correctly?
Absolutely.
So my question is, but how much does that matter to you? And I mean it authentically. You know, some people, many people have dreams, they have visions, but like, how much does that actually matter to you? Like, if it went no broader than it is currently, would that matter to you?
Love that question. I love how you're digging to understanding my emotion behind that.
And that would be a step two question. Like, part of the step two dynamic is exploring what's at stake. What's at stake? Because what's at stake brings us present to our pain. Mm-hmm. As a benefit throwing, it's like, hey, Mark, you know what? I have this great thing you could do. I have this amazing app and program. We could generate clients for you. Like, I don't have those things. I'm just making that up. But it's amazing. It's incredible. But if we're not present to something being at stake, we're receiving the information completely differently.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. Very similar to, there's behavioral economics theory that suggests that we're two times as emotionally driven to make a decision based on fear of loss rather than the opportunity of gain. So I could say to you, Sean, look, if you do this thing, you'll make 200 grand. And that's exciting to a certain extent. But if I had to say to you, Sean, if you don't do this thing, you're going to lose out on 200 grand. Now the emotion that's attached to losing out on that is significantly higher.
Which is why litigation is as expensive and everybody is fighting to not lose something.
That's right.
That's exactly what drives litigation and the emotional constructs. And if you think about it, think of what people will do to protect their wallet or the purse of somebody they love. If there's a pickpocket, a thief, a mugger, often people very reflexively react and do something when it's crazy. What do most people have? $100 in their wallet and credit cards? Here you go. Who cares? And the very same people will take so little action to improve their relationships, to improve their finances, to improve their happiness, their health, for that exact same reason.
I love that, man. Fantastic. In step three, you talk about a unique identity. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So in every situation, I'm analyzing when people are communicating, and I have a very fun R&D laboratory that I get to experiment in every day. The dynamic at step three is to make sure we don't sound like everybody else. I fundamentally believe this, that every human being, every, speaks a different language, at least a different dialect, but I think a different language. So when we have a discussion, you say negotiating and I say influence, we mean two things that are imperfectly matched. It's imperfect, like a snowflake. Uh-huh. Like every word carries a slightly different meaning and emotion for the people who communicate them, which is why communication becomes so complex. And when we're conveying at step three who we are, people fall so in love with their product, their service, their stuff, that they're very fixated on sharing it, which tends to sound like exactly what somebody else who does what you do says. Step three is about creating your, what we call, heroic unique identity. So there's emotional dynamics at play that are integrous and authentic, genuinely who and what you are, that people are hearing and receiving and gravitating to, because the outcome of step three is that you are perceived to be congruently unique, meaning not just unique and weird, like odd, different, off-putting, but something that resonates so that people are genuinely curious, meaning listening is open and they're like, wow, this person might actually be for real. Because people are so conditioned to say no with the bombardment of influence that comes at them. Step three is critical. So then not only does somebody like you at step one and are open or really feel pulled towards you emotionally, at step two, there's something at stake. Now at step three, they're perceiving you to be somebody who authentically can solve the pain of step two because of how you've uniquely conveyed who you are and certain characteristics at step three.
When we say congruently unique, do we mean congruently unique to what you're trying to communicate or what you're offering?
Yes. We're saying both, that you're congruently unique as to your offering, as to who you are, as to if you have a company, what your company is. So let's say you're a representative of Salesforce or the United States government, and the person that you're communicating with, the outcome would be that they perceive you to be unique and credible, offering of what you do to be unique and credible. And if they're going to do business and say yes to you, I mean, perhaps the hostage situation might be slightly distinct because they might have distrust overall for the government, but they might trust you. So put that to the side. But generally, yes, if they're going to purchase a service, say yes to what you're communicating on behalf of, in addition to wanting you to be credible and be congruently unique, that we'd want congruent uniqueness to be associated with the entity that we are representing or a part of.
Is there a way to develop that congruency? Because oftentimes I find with salespeople that I work with especially, there seems to be sometimes, this isn't all the time, but certainly sometimes there's a lack of enthusiasm around the product or the service that they're selling. And so when that happens, they create this incongruency that exists, right? They want us to buy this thing, but they're not enthusiastic about it. So is there a way for people to develop that congruency?
Yeah, I think there's a way to develop it and to maintain it. Mm. So coming into this wonderful opportunity to communicate with all of you fine folks and yourself, Mark, I've been communicating all day. I was on 5 Real Raws for Rise Unblinded today, which is a privilege and honor. So as you know, it's very different communicating into a computer than in front of an audience. It's a level of energetic transference. So, and I was a couple moments late. Thank you for your patience and our getting started, because I was making sure that I was putting energy back into my body, that I was literally getting back into my body. So when we talk about energetic transference, which is one of the indispensable elements, and I also believe there's 4 critical energies of influence, they all begin with us being inside of our body. And if we're not in our body and we're not present to its critical importance, then yes, we are subject to the whims of the day. Mm-hmm. So by the 4 p.m. sales call, that very fine salesperson, wonderful person who may care very much about their product, may not have an understanding of how to put energy back into their body. So therefore, there's no energetic transference, congruence disappears. And without energetic transference from one person to another, there's an amazing dilution of the ability to go from hello to yes and influence.
This is super interesting to me because there, and I could speak from personal experience as well, by the end of the day, on whatever day it might be, you're just like, I'm done. I'm spent. I put everything I have into today. The last thing I want to do is this lost sales phone call. And so you just, it saps energy out of you. How do you maintain and build that energy throughout the day?
Yeah. So one condition pattern of awareness. So I don't think we could shift anything without awareness. So we can condition into ourselves the ability to be very present to our energy level. Throughout the day, I will literally get inside my body. What does that mean? I'll do planks on Zoom calls. So when we're doing real raw, I'll do planks. I'll do jumping jacks. I'll do body weight squats. I will literally be like, yes, yes, yes. Like I'll literally do emphatic movements with my body to feel my abdomen, to feel my chest, to feel my legs, getting inside my body, engaging my vocal cords, moving my entire body as I speak to keep myself in my body and generate energy. And so the few of the things that I will do, and this goes all the way back, Mark, I have the unique privilege of being one of my 2 attorneys in the United States during 2014 to 16 to be in the top 100 national jury verdicts twice. The only one that was blind, I'm blind. And in that process, I would be literally in court and I would go in the bathroom in between certain breaks and intervals. I would go into a stall and I would do bodyweight squats. I would literally put paper towels on the floor and I would do push-ups. And I would do anything to get the cortisol out of my system and replace endorphins. So I literally am very present to, and I offer this to everybody, this consideration that you become aware of your cortisol level versus endorphin level in your body. And when your endorphins are flowing, you're functioning completely differently in your cognition, but also in your ability to transfer emotion and energy.
Incredible. Step 4, agreement formation. So we've gotten to the point where we've now, in a recap, we've created emotional rapport, we've found pain, and we've developed our yes strategy. We are congruent with our unique identity, and now we're getting to the point where we're going to actually create agreement in our communication. What's agreement formation all about?
Yeah, agreement formation is all about, number one, loving people unconditionally. And why do I say that? I say that because we can have a subjective disagreement about value exchange, which is what agreement formation is also all about. So one, it's about our loving other people unconditionally with boundaries. Second, it's about value exchange being fair and equitable. And we can have a subjective disagreement about it. But if we objectively know that what we're doing is wrong, objectively know that this is an unfair value exchange, then we are out of integrity. And we are doing something different than step 4 agreement formation, which is where manipulation, closing a sale, utilizing leverage and manipulating techniques is now in play. So agreement formation to me in our model of integrity-based human influence is about truly believing that what we're proposing is best and how we get there. And we get there through effective questioning, leaning into objections, something we call level 5 listening, which is one of my favorite topics in the entire world. And that's the mechanism of finally getting to our yes, but it's not our yes. It's going from hello to yes with the other person in a consensual, equitable, mutual yes.
Yeah. Love that, man. Wow, this has been an incredible interview. And I can definitely feel that you brought yourself, even after all that you've been through today, with the amount of stuff that you've done today, you brought all of yourself into this conversation and you were focused. And I want to thank you for that. I really appreciate this. And for the listeners, just so that you know, I highly recommend that you check out what Sean is doing online. And to that end, Sean, how do people find you online?
So the best place to find us is unblindedhuddle.com, or you can drop into unblindedsalesmastery.com. And we have a whole ton of stuff that we do and would love to connect on. Much of it is free. We believe in giving massive, massive value. These are not tripwires. They're not funnels. They're mechanisms to give massive value on a daily basis to find folks like yourself for free. And Mark, it's been an honor and a privilege being here.
You're a machine, man. Keep rocking it. You're crushing it. Love what you're doing. Listeners, thank you so much for being here today. Sean, again, thank you so much. Hey, friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.